are back. Bill Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. So, wow. Good doings. That one got a few text messages. We'll check those out here in 1 second. Text lines are indeed open. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. And I have to go ahead now and go ahead and eat some crow, sort of. I got so busy yesterday with our final dipper that I forgot to pause. So I'm going to do it right out the gate so I don't forget today. So we had the College Pick'em Contest, right? Butters is well aware. We did the NCAA Pick'em Contest. Boomer is the one who set it up for us. A bunch of y'all chimed in. I am proud to say, first of all, that I did finish in the 40s after being in the 50s for so long. It was awful. I was in like beyond 50% purgatory longest time.
Do you get a participation trophy for that?
There's a participation trophy somewhere in my life, I feel certain. But right now I've had to earn all of them otherwise.
I would be well below 50.
Yes,
so.
I am number 47, so there's that. Nothing for me. But what I will be proud to announce is that the winner of the overall is John from Huntsville. Well, you have some applause over there? I know you have some applause somewhere you can play for me. Just John from Huntsville. Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much, John from Huntsville. Thank you. Thank you very much. There it is. Nicely done. Nicely done. Butters on the sound effects. You're doubling up the sound effects over there, bro. That was good. But yeah, 249 points. Second place. Butters, do you know who? McQueen.
Nice.
Which were
was
pretty...
it? Was it McQueen actual?
Come on.
Or Mr. McQueen?
How misogynistic of you to say that? I mean, could she not pick her up? No, it was Boomer.
Hey, look, again, she could,
begrudgingly
I'm
confessed.
Sure she could do better picks than I could, but that's probably because of by proxy of living with Boomer.
Yep. So I think pretty much what happened was McQueen got the good picks, and then Boomer would do some of like the maybe the upset picks and things that didn't come true later on, but Boomer still wound up in fifth place. So, I mean, gotta love it. But anyway, congratulations, John from Huntsville. We got a Right Side Ruffian T-shirt coming your way, dude, and proud of you. Thank you very much. A couple of other text messages before we hit the break. Let's see what we got here. JT from Lacey Springs, he says, I was about to bring this up. JT, good on you. He says, Max Baer, the boxer that fought James J. Braddock back in the 30s, that was the father of the guy, Max Baer, who played Jethro on the Beverly Hillbillies.
Wow.
Little known fact, but there it is. And you know, I don't know what he was like in real life, but do you ever see the movie Cinderella Man with Russell Crowe, the boxing movie?
Yeah, it's been a while, but yeah.
It's a great movie about the true life story of James J. Braddock. But the Max Baer character was detestable. I don't know if he was that way in real life, but he was absolutely the epitome of arrogance and, you know, just yeah, that guy. You know, wearing the big fur jackets when he walked in the restaurants with a woman on each arm and you know, throwing a drink in your face kind of guy. Anyway, Max Baer, there it is. Morgan from Fort Myers says, there's people out there and they want to steal joy from life, period. It's not just sports. They want to steal the innocence from our kids in all aspects of life. I don't disagree with that. Morgan, thank you very much. Bruce from Hazel Green says, I agree with you 100%, Phil, but I'm sick and tired of these athletes thinking they're better than everyone else. They're just athletes and they're overpaid crybabies. Yes, sometimes it is. Megan Rapinoe comes up in my mind. Colin Kaepernick, who started the whole kneeling thing. So I totally agree. There are times when I wish the athletes would realize that we don't always want to hear their protests and their crybabies information. But Brian from Huntsville says, sports, Tiger Woods would still be the best if his driving game had not failed him. Oh, that was awful. That was bad. Brian, that was like, we need to womp, womp. You got a womp, womp. I know you do over there. I don't know if you know which button it is, but there's one that goes womp, womp, womp. I think I just did it for you. There you go. Womp, womp, womp.
I think we're going to stick with that because we're about seconds away from music starting for the break.
No worries. All right, listen, we got a great show laid on for you. Just wanted you to know that we are going to be heading down Home Fries next. Coming up, got a major announcement. This came out from Senator Tommy Tuberville, and he will be on the show tomorrow if all goes as planned. In the meantime, y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.
Hey, all you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, Alabama. I mean, y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. All right, you know the deal. You know the deal. Every once in a while, when I'm looking through the news, I'm thinking that one pays it. That one pays special interest to, you know, Alabama. Oh, this one over here, that one's our listening area big time. Oh, this one over here is one of our Alabama politicos. Pretty soon, I realize what I've got is a whole batch of what we like to call cooking up some home fries. Yeah. Oh, the sound of smell it. All right, so yeah, we're cooking up a batch of home fries. Well, first out the gate. Got a call just a little while ago, right before I went on the air, from the communications team at Senator Tommy Tuberville's office. And they wanted me to know there had been a major announcement just today, and that is that the senator is lifting his hold on the vast majority of military promotions. Now, keep in mind a couple things. Why has he been doing this? Number one, because the DOD, under the direction of the Biden administration, has been acting as if it has legislative authority, and it does not. The DOD has, in violation of federal law, been allocating funding for abortions and abortion travels for military members, which also, by the way, flies in the face of state laws. So if you've got people stationed in, say, Alabama, at one of our military installations, and they decide they want an abortion, the U.S. military has been saying, that's okay, we'll get you there. That silly state of Alabama has a state law. We won't. So basically the bottom line is this. Tuberville's been saying, hey, know your role. Here's the other thing. Flag officers, that's like generals and admirals, flag officers, they have to be confirmed to get their star, their second star, their third star, and then some major positions. And so if they are moving to be the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs or whatever, that's a Senate confirmation. The way it works is they have the regular order of business. The regular order of business is bring them up, debate them, talk it through, cast a vote. They're either yays or nays. Once they count the yays and the nays, you know where you stand. You're either confirmed or you're not. The Senate very often doesn't do that. A lot of times they'll package them up, and they'll have maybe 15 or 20 at a time. And they'll bring them in, and somebody will make a motion to dispense with the regular order of business to be allowed to take these bills up in their entirety as a package. And they'll pass 20 of them at a time, you know, by unanimous consent. Bada-bing. No debate. And granted, part of it is because they're trusting the military to pick the ones they want. All right. Tuberville, though, took advantage of a rule that Democrats have used multiple times, although Tuberville hung on to it longer than most. He said, you know what? I am not going to agree. Because one senator, all it takes is one senator can say, I refuse to concur with dispensing with the regular order of business. And so he said, no, you can still confirm them, but you got to do them one at a time. Well, Schumer will have none of it. Schumer didn't like being bossed around. Schumer thought that it was, you know, an opportunity for him to try and point out, you know, conservative values, you know, like it was something wrong. And so Schumer refused to do it. He wound up having to do a few, and he did. Notice you have a new chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Oh, my gosh, how can that be? Because Schumer did it like he was supposed to. Anyway, as of today, what we understand is Senator Tuberville has agreed that because the House was able to pass a National Defense Authorization Act, the budget for the military, the NDAA, with a provision in it that says we will not use federal funds for abortions and we will rescind that policy. Since the House is sending that up to the Senate for debate, even though Schumer is probably not going to take it up, Tuberville said that he's willing to go ahead and lift his hold on everything but four stars. His thoughts were, if you're a four-star flag officer, we still need to talk about you.
In the meantime, all the one stars, twos, and threes, and certain key positions are going to be allowed to go through in the regular order of business, or excuse me, by dispensing the regular order and doing it in a hurry. Tuberville made a statement at an ad hoc press conference. I saw a video clip of it. It was actually taken like he was walking to his car, and he stopped and he talked to the press. Butters, you got that clip? Let's do this. What I want to do is I just want to take a minute and I want to play a couple of minutes of a of an audio, like an off-the-cuff presser with Senator Tommy Tuberville, talk about why he did what he did. Go ahead, bud.
We just came to a conclusion. All of us are against a rule change in the Senate, okay? We're all against it. Now, it's been a long fight. We fought hard. We did the right thing for the unborn and for our military, fighting back against executive overreach and an abortion policy that's not legal. That being said, Senator Schumer changed the rules on NDAA. And when you change the rules, it's hard to beat somebody. I'd love to have five downs in football instead of four, but you can't do it. It's got to be fair for everybody. So that being said, I'm not going to hold the promotions of these people any longer. We just released them. Everybody, about 440 of them, everybody but the 10 or 11 four-stars, okay? Those will continue to have a hold, and we're going to ask Senator Schumer to bring up one at a time. I think where our military is today, our top leaders need to be vetted, just like everybody else. Need to be vetted. We need to know who they are and why they're making all the decisions of our military. So important. So it's been tough. It's almost been a year since I sent that letter. But the big thing is we're all together in our caucus that nobody, it'll be 100%, that will vote against any standing order that will change the rules of the Senate for these holds. Questions? Couple of questions.
All right, you want to stop it there. All right, well, good on him. You know what? I'm good with that. I think it's time. I can see lifting the hold. I don't mind the idea of the four stars getting selective attention. I get that too. I also think he knew. Apparently, he knew that Schumer may have had enough Republican. Well, I know he did. He had a number of Republicans who were willing to vote against their own caucus and change the rules to get around Tuberville. And Tuberville was not going to split his own caucus that way. So good on him, and I appreciate his stand so far. But there's your first round of home fries, is that right now, brand spanking new, right out the gate, that's a fresh audio clip that, for the most part, most of the world hasn't heard. You're hearing it probably for the first time here on Right Side Today, and that is our U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville from Alabama has made a heroic stand. I'll be honest. He was the Mr. Smith goes to Washington guy for about the last year. His own caucus, for the most part, stood with him, although behind the scenes there were some who were saying, come on, man. And I think that some of those folks need to get a backbone. But what you saw for the last year, whether you totally agree with it or not, if you're a conservative, if you're a Republican, I hope you recognize that you had a U.S. senator. When's the last time you saw this? You had a U.S. senator who was willing to go the long haul on something that made him personally very uncomfortable and could have made his life easier if he had just gone along to get along. But he chose not to. And, you know, he had to go ahead and say it's time now, and I appreciate him. I appreciate also his staff letting us know so that we could have the heads up to give you guys first run on it. And we're planning, if his schedule will allow, it looks like he'll be on the air with us right about this time tomorrow. Speaking of which, before I go to the break, I'll just tell you, so tomorrow's going to be interesting. So tomorrow I will be broadcasting remotely from Tuscaloosa, headed down there for the Alabama-based GOP primary debate. They just announced that the field of four is going to be on the stage. So we're down to four. They're winnowing the field. Doug Burgum actually dropped out of the race altogether. A couple others have not made it to the stage. And then the ones that are going to be on stage tomorrow are, believe it or not, Chris Christie is still in the running, trying to figure that out. Vivek Ramaswamy, Ron DeSantis, and Nikki Haley will be on stage tomorrow night in Tuscaloosa. I'll be there in the spin room after the debate, but I'll be doing the show from there because there's no way to do the show here in the studio and then get on down. So Butters has the con tomorrow, and I'll be in transit.
Man, that's quite a use of a naval term there. I like that.
I did that just for you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to be all up here all alone.
Belay that order, seaman. Coil those lines. Scrub that deck.
It's going to be
you swabbies.
I'm anxious to hear how everything goes down there. It's going to be interesting for sure. So
and you were an aviator. You never scrubbed a deck once in your life, did you?
No. yeah, I'm for those that that are listening. Yeah, I commissioned straight out of Auburn, so I didn't get into swabbing decks all that much. But
yeah, it should be interesting. You're right. And I look forward to it. And I really appreciate the folks at the Capstone Hotel helping me secure a conference room from which to do the show. May have a few walk-ins on us tomorrow. We'll see. Looking at Senator Trumbullville also joining us, and then hopefully the Grand Council also. And then afterwards, I'll be at the GOP watch party, followed by the spin room after the debate. But yep, that's that. Let's take a break there, brother. We'll do that right now. We'll come right back. And wow, big doings. I got some more home fries to cook up for you. And then top of the hour, Stephanie Smith calling in. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, just like making common sense like a superpower. So, yeah, we are right now cooking up a whole batch of what we like to call home fries. Oh, yeah, just sizzling in the pan. So this is like a series of stories that you find in and around your state, things that might matter to you, but they relate to where you are, and that's important. Like, for instance, the first story we had there. Senator Tommy Tuberville has had a pretty heroic stand, and you know, Democrats hated it. They hated it. And some, you know, weak-kneed Republicans also hated it. It makes life more difficult. Shut up. You need somebody once in a while to show you what backbone looks like, and I think that was, I mean, if he did something wrong, I'd call it out, but I don't see anything wrong in what he did. How about this story? Total change of subject. How about this one? In the home fries category. You may recall that last week or so, I did a story on EVs, electric vehicles, and the fact that there was a massive number of auto dealers who sent an open letter to the President of the United States asking him to please back off his EV mandates because it's crushing their souls right now. It's killing their bottom line. Well, it turns out a whole bunch of those were from Alabama. So you might want to know this. 1819 News has the story. It says electric vehicles are, quote, stacking up on our lots, and President Joe Biden should, quote, tap the brakes on the unrealistic government electric vehicle mandate. Wow. So 55 of the dealerships on that letter were from Alabama, thousands of them total across the country. It says the letter asked Biden to, quote, slow down your proposed regulations mandating battery electric vehicle production and distribution. And then they go on to give some stats. And they talk about the fact that he's pushing for like 67% all electric by the year 2032. And they're like, what? But here's what they said. I thought this was pretty epic. Said, while the goals of the regulations are admirable, they require consumer acceptance to become a reality. With each passing day, it becomes more apparent that this attempted electric vehicle mandate is unrealistic based on current and forecasted customer demand. Already electric vehicles are stacking up on our lots, which is the best indicator of customer demand in the marketplace. I mean, totally well said. Biden's never run a business. He's never had to cut a paycheck, much less run an auto business. He has no idea what goes into manufacturing. He has no idea what goes into sales, retail sales, customer demand, trying to meet supply and demand, you know, kind of in the middle where supply and demand complement each other. Anyway, it goes on from there. I'll finish this up. It says, Mr. President, no government agency, no think tank, and no polling firm knows more about the automobile customer than us. Some customers are in the market for electric vehicles, and we're thrilled to sell them. But the majority of customers are simply not ready to make the change. They are concerned about EVs being unaffordable. Many do not have garages for home charging or easy access to public charging stations. Customers are also concerned about the loss of driving range in cold and hot weather. Some have long daily commutes and don't have the time to charge the batteries overnight. Truck buyers are especially put off by the dramatic loss of range when they're towing. And today's current technology is not adequate to support the needs of the majority of our consumers. That's the dealers saying that, y'all, of which 55 were from Alabama, a bunch from this listing area. I mean, I can just read off a few of them to you. Let me find a few that I know are in this listing area. Greenway, Hyundai in the Shoals, Greenway Kia, Greenway Kia of the Shoals in River Chase, and Greenway Nissan of Florence, Sarah Hyundai, who else? Sarah Toyota of Birmingham, Sarah Toyota of Decatur, Sonny King Automotive Group, that's the Fords, Hondas, and Toyotas over in Anniston, Team One Chevrolet, and Team One Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram of Gadsden, and Team One Hyundai of Gadsden, Toyota of the Shoals, University Kia. Anyway, there's probably more on this list, but the bottom line is you had a whole bunch, a plethora, a large amount of auto dealers saying, please stop the madness.
So I'm shocked, Phil, that there's limits to how much the government can impact and drive an entire marketplace. I would have never thought that.
Just when you get that false floor on a market, it's going to fall out eventually. God. I'm just saying. Actually, this might be a false ceiling. False ceiling, probably. Expectations way too high. Can't get there. Yeah. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, you can drive things in certain ways, but this is nuts.
It is nuts, and I'm glad they're. I've been wondering how long it would take for the auto industry to start calling them out. I'm surprised it's the dealers first, because the manufacturers are losing their shirt right now. What was it? Ford posted a $5.4 billion loss last quarter alone in their EVs.
Yeah.
You've got multiple, like I think you had GM and Toyota, I think it was, that were going to do a joint venture on a plant, and they canceled it. It's not there. You can't create a false market and expect it to be sustainable.
And if I understand it correctly, too, they're also still coming off of COVID issues with the markup, issues and all that kind
supply
of stuff.
Chain
so it's
jacked
yeah,
up.
Yeah. Yep. So it's all yeah. But I mean, I guess it is capitalism, and that it's hitting them in the wallet, and it pushes them to push back.
Yeah. Well, I said the other day, the market will self-correct eventually, and it's starting to do it now. And this is even with the government giving everybody a $7,500 incentive to go buy, and they still can't do it. It's not there yet. It can get there, but it's not there yet. Here's one for you. I don't know which one I want to go with here first. Let me do this. I'll do this one with about a minute left. I did not see this combination of terms on my bingo card for the day. Story from WHNT Channel 19 out of Huntsville. Black-owned family farms partner with Victoria's Secret for their cotton supplies. You know, they can find a way to make it about race on everything. But apparently, women's lingerie needs cotton grown by minority-owned farms for it to be the right kind of lingerie, I guess. There it is. And the owners of the farm, congratulations to them, though. The Bridgeforth Farms, they're a multi-generational family-owned business. The original great-grandfather was a freed slave in Limestone County. This is all honorable. I love the storyline. I think it's a great story. But here's his statement, Mr. Bridgeforth. He says, they want us to use, this is a Victoria's Secret, they want us to use regenerative ag practices and climate-smart practices when we're producing our cotton for them. So we have to be selective in the bales that meet their criteria. So let me get this straight. Women's lingerie has to be grown by minority-owned farms using climate-smart practices and regenerative ag practices in order for it to qualify to be a Victoria's Secret bra, I guess.
But at least they're not doing it through legislation, and they're going straight to the farmers.
Well, bro, you just found a high side. Thank you, Butters, for filling me in. Anyway, that's right here in Alabama. That's over in Tanner, Alabama. The Bridgeforth Farm, congratulations to them. They're going to be making, lots of women happy, I guess. There it is. More on this, Stephanie Smith, President, Alabama Policy Institute, calling in next. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.
right side ruffians out there. You are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
Hour number two. I'm about to jump on the phones with our friend Stephanie Smith, but I got to tell you, I got a very cool text there. Stan from Huntsville is celebrating and wants to celebrate on the air. Stan from Huntsville says, I think he goes to Church of the Highlands. He says he was just baptized a month ago by Pastor Jason, just wanted to share some praise. That's good stuff, man. Thank you for sharing that, Stan. Congratulations to you. There it is. Thank you, Butters. All right, let me jump on it. So our friend Stephanie Smith is the president of the Alabama Policy Institute. You can find them at alabamapolicy.org. I was proud to be on staff for a number of years with them. They do great work developing conservative policy positions and doing the research and advocacy necessary. And with that, I want to say hello, Stephanie Smith. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Phil. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Hey, I want to run by a couple of stories here. So the first one, there's this organization called PARCA, Public Affairs Research Council of Alabama. You're so gracious. I know you won't say it. I will say it. They usually get hired to go find the results that somebody needs. Anyway,
right?
PARCA came out with a study, and they're like, oh, we're not going to have much revenue. Revenue is about to go down, state of Alabama. Pray tell, Stephanie, why would this be necessary?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So there was an AL.com article that I saw where the executive director of PARCA said that the kind of money quote was the very end was lawmakers will once again be faced with needs that outpace revenues. And that was, to me, I was like, yeah, that was one of those moments budget nerds kind of give the sideways like, hey, you know, no. That is not, I don't think that's, first of all, I don't think that's an accurate statement. I actually, some of us on staff read their report, and their report is, you know, it's an in-depth report. It's a little more balanced than his statement indicates. But the interesting thing is that, you know, the mantra and the messaging is now, even with, you know, huge increases in budgets and huge increases in spending over the last decade by state government, now it's, oh, we're out of money. Yeah. And so then the question becomes, which A, I don't think that's accurate, and then B, then the next question becomes, why? Why is that the new mantra? And the new mantra is that because there are a lot of people pushing for gambling right now. And so people have to have a catalyst of why we need to expand gambling. And it's usually, well, we need the money for education, or we need the money for, you know, whatever's on the list during that year to pay for with the gambling quote revenues. And so that's my guess of why we're suddenly out of money, even though education spending is up 86% over the last decade in the state of Alabama.
Yeah. I'm going to add one more log to that fire. I think, the combined mantra is going to be, well, you're saying you want to do more on the grocery tax, which will take money away from the kids. So the only thing we can do then is to find it somewhere else. So I see this as being a double-edged sword, and I agree with you. I'm not going to be a bit surprised to find out that some Republican leadership either commissioned this this survey, and or I wouldn't be surprised if the teachers union didn't do it because they want more money.
Right. Well, I actually was part of a panel that ended up being a little bit more of a debate than a panel this last week with the governmental affairs person from the Alabama Education Association. And that is basically what she led with. And so she led with the fact that we need revenue for education. And unfortunately for her, I brought the budget with me. So I had the numbers in front of me. Which is why it turned a little bit more into a debate than a panel. But, you know, I think you're right. I think it's one of those, you know, people who want to expand Medicaid always use rural hospitals as an excuse, even though that, you know, Medicaid expansion doesn't help rural hospitals. People who want gambling and higher education budget always use the excuse of, you know, some sort of minute tax cut, some sort of corporate tax cut or something that actually filters back into the economy as an excuse to raise taxes on the other side. I mean, that's what we fought against, you know, when you were at API, that's what we fought against even last year, trying to get, you know, the grocery tax cut, the, you know, small percentage cut that we ended up achieving. And the interesting thing is that there's a grocery tax commission that met that is doing an in-depth analysis of how that tax cut is impacting the state. And it is impacting the state in that people are spending more money on other things, and it's not actually negatively impacting the state budget at all.
Well, I would not be surprised. But I have to go back to something you said. Wait a minute. You were in a debate forum with the governmental affairs person from the teachers union, and there's no video available right now? Where is it? I got to see this.
Yeah, it was at the Republican Women's State Convention last week. And so it was a school choice panel, and credit to her, Allison King, and I told her afterwards, I was like, hey, credit to you for showing up here, because she was, you know, I felt like I was preaching to the choir, and she did not. So it was one of those, you know, credit to her for showing up, but we didn't agree on much, as you might imagine,
yeah.
And she actually said that she thought that AEA could be on board with school choice, which was a surprise to all of us.
That's called we see the handwriting on the wall, and we don't know what else to do except try to get on board and mitigate our damages.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I was going to say.
I
think that the tactic now is we see this train is coming down the track, so we're going to try to minimize it as much as we can or derail it at the last second.
Well, let me jump on something else before we run out of time. I've got two other stories that I want to see if I have time to just touch on with you. One on gambling and one on gas tax. So I'll do gas tax first, off the cuff here, because I didn't prep you or anything for this, but I saw, you know, our friends at Signal, Brent Buchanan, John Rogers.
Yeah.
I know those guys well. I like them.
Mm-hmm.
But they just published on Twitter, and I saw it like today. I think I sent you a screenshot of it, but they say that they've just completed a poll, I believe, in the state of Florida, and the overwhelming majority of people of all stripes and walks of life believe that those who own an electric vehicle should have to pay a fee to the state for owning it because they don't pay gas tax at the pump. So is this the prelude to, dang, we ain't getting as much gas tax revenue as we wanted, now we got to find a new way to tax people?
There's always a new way to tax people. Tax them, tax them coming, tax them going, tax them for breathing. You know, I mean, that's hilarious because, you know, Florida's not Alabama, but they have so many, you know, toll roads and other things in Florida. But you know, that's kind of a different subject. But here's my thing on the electric vehicles. They cost a ton of money. It takes years to recoup your cost. But even if you make that personal decision that you're going to, you know, have the electric vehicle, here's my question. At what point in American history did state government ever pay for gas stations to be established on every corner?
Oh, man. You're going down that road. I know where you're going. Go ahead.
So why is the state of Alabama and virtually every other state using state funds and taxpayer dollars through a grant program to establish plug-in stations, stations for electric vehicles, either at gas stations or at other locations so that people who have electric vehicles can use those for free or use those for, you know, and have a payment situation. But the question is, why is that a governmental function when it was never a governmental function to create gas stations at convenience?
It's not. It's a classic example of state government being complicit with federal government attempting to gerrymander the markets and create a false market that is sooner or later, and really I think already sooner, is already happening. I just read a story before you came on the air earlier that the false market is beginning to self-correct. Consumers don't want the crap. I mean, they're not ready for it yet. It's you're finding a niche market as opposed to an overwhelming market, and what you just described is an abuse to me of the opportunity to use tax dollars for things that the free market would not normally sustain.
That's right. And so if there is a market for electric vehicles, then that will generate itself. And if there is enough of a market for the vehicles, that will create a market for charging the vehicles. But creating these false charging, using taxpayer dollars to make charging stations for something that people don't want and then taxing them on both ends of it is about the most bureaucratic thing that I can think of.
Yeah. Well, listen, here with about 2.5-3 minutes left, story on Yellowhammer News yesterday. You and I have talked about this before, but the headline Grayson Everett wrote it. The headline is Alabama feeling lucky about gaming in 2024? what are you hearing with your ear to the ground? I mean, they're coming after it. I know they are. What do you think? What are you hearing?
Yeah, I'm hearing that it's going to be a different build than what we have seen before.
All right.
There is a chance that they are not going to try to pick winners and losers from on the front end, which is interesting. Because I'm not sure that they're going to be able to get that passed, because those who have been illegally operating and have the brick and mortar illegal operations are clearly going to want, you know, the benefit of that. Whether or not it's an actual bid process or a fair process remains to be seen. But here's the messaging strategy on this, and I have some trouble with it. The messaging strategy is it's everywhere illegally, So let's legalize it.
Yeah,
and that doesn't pass the logic test.
No, it doesn't.
For any illegal activity, legalizing it does not minimize it.
No.
It increases it.
It absolutely increases
and so
it. It's embarrassing.
The idea that it's everywhere, we should legalize it, is nonsensical. It's everywhere, we should enforce it, and if we can't enforce it for some reason, we need to increase the enforceability.
Well, you make the point that I made the other day exactly, one of the quotes was, we need to legalize it so that we can regulate it and tax it. Well, the laws technically are a form of regulation, so how about you just upfund the Attorney General's office and let him do his job?
Right.
That's all you
got
to do.
Absolutely. And if people are doing it, if people have illegal gambling operations and just treat the misdemeanor fine as a cost of doing business, that is an indicator that it needs to be a higher fine and or a felony.
Well,
an indicator that we need to make sure they can stay in business.
And I want to know about these legislators who have been touring the illegal gaming facilities. They say that in their articles. We've toured a number of illegal gaming facilities, and we see what's happening. I'm like, well, did you tell law enforcement? Did you identify yourselves? Or did you just spin the dials a few times and see what you could get and then walk out the door and write an article? I don't know.
I was actually told that in a couple of instances they took law enforcement with them.
Oh, my gosh. That's like a whole different conversation. Good Lord.
That is a whole different conversation.
All right, sister, we appreciate you. If people want to know more about the Policy Institute, tell them where they can find you and what you got going on.
You can find us at alabamapolicy.org.
All right. Stephanie Smith, president of API, we appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Phil.
Take care. All right. Take it to a break there, Butters, as we get the tone from the phone. Yeah, we'll take the break. We'll come right back. I got a little bit more of home fries. I mean, listen, get you a second helping. We got all the home fries. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, just making it cool to be a conservative. Let me see what I got here. We've been cooking up a batch of home fries right here in the studio. That's when we take stories that are certainly from around and about this area, right as our listening area around the state of Alabama, or things that impact Alabama. Got a number of text messages. I'll jump on those real quick before they get stale. By the way, Tom from Harvest said he tried to call in, but Tom, we had somebody on the line, so we couldn't just jump over there and get it. He's concerned that we're not giving the full story on electric vehicles. So, okay, Tom, you are welcome to text me your thoughts or call it in later. Kimball from Harvest says taxing citizens coming and going, finding every which way to continuously bring in revenue to the state's coffers, searching every nook and cranny of the people's lives is an egregious form of tyranny. How oppressive. Said Reagan had it right when he said the purpose of government is to protect the people, not run their lives. Kimball from Harvest. apparently out there in Harvest, they got a lot of thoughts about this EV tax stuff. I agree with you, though. Devin from Brownsboro says, Phil, just a quick question. Talking about Alabama finances, says, my wife mentioned to me the other day, she saw a story about Alabama beginning to send out rebate checks starting this month. I have not heard much about the financials in Alabama for a little while. I'm clueless as to whether it's fact or fiction. It is true. It is fact. They started going out last Friday, I believe. It's $150 per single taxpayer or $300 per joint household. It was a one-time rebate. We had a windfall of money in the state. I really think that it would have been better suited if they'd done more what I call long-term tax relief, substantive tax, you know, reform. But they chose to do one-time monies, and they're doing it right before Christmas. So a lot of houses are going to be getting those very soon. I think you said, did I see in here, you said, maybe you did say he moved here. Anyway, he's been, anyway, bottom line is, Devin, they are coming out. Marcus from Huntsville. Alabama already charges people a tax to own an EV. Yes, they do, with the higher registration fees. They claim the EVs are heavier and tear up the road more than gas vehicles. The real reason is they feared losing money from the gas tax. I agree, but just you keep an eye on Marcus, because what's going to wind up happening is if the government's mandating, you know, the higher percentage of gas vehicles and that mandate's allowed to stick, they're going to turn right around and they're going to slap another fee on it. You wait and see. What else we got here? Brian from Decatur says, caught your show late today. Not sure how Tuberville stood his ground. He's still caved, just like all the other Republicans and politicians that appear strong at the beginning. What am I missing? Did the Democrats agree to the original terms? Well, Brian, look at it. He's been doing it for a year. And he's also got to the point now that members of his own caucus have left him. And he's got just enough who have gone over to Schumer, and they're about to change the rules on him and do it without him, whether he wants to or not. So he is willing to go ahead now and say, I'll lift my hold on the most of them. And I think that's, I don't think Democrats got what they wanted. I think Democrats are still ticked. You spent a year with the Biden administration not getting its stuff done, and Tuberville making the point that one man can still make a difference. So I don't see that as being a loss. Donna from Hartsell says, this retired senior master sergeant has your back, sir. Thank you. Donna, I appreciate you. Thank you very much, and thanks for your service. We're going to wind up taking a break and come back. I got to put a lid on home fries and get to the next segment, which is, I'm going to go ahead and skip forward to number three. I'm going to be doing snowflakes and know-nothings, because I'm ready to kick off on that one. It's a hoot. We'll start off with that, but I'll finish up home fries when we get back from this break to include, did we finally just see everybody get their medical marijuana licenses? I don't know. Third time's a charm? We'll see. And then State Senator Elliott says he's about to redo the way that the Alabama Archives and History Board is staffed or manned. Interesting. And then, wow, was there ever a shootout in downtown Birmingham? I'll tell you about that, too. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. A little more home fries. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, just saving the world one soundbite at a time as we're covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation, Alabama. Yeah, and I mean like from way down south of Birmingham to up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. All right, we're gonna wrap up this batch of home fries. The discussion with Stephanie Smith was good. It was, and there's a couple more pieces of it I want to throw out there. So here's another one that I didn't see. You know, earlier I mentioned that I did not see on my bingo card today that I was going to see minority-owned farms being necessary to make women's lingerie for Victoria's Secret. But there you have it, because that's the ESG world that some companies live in. But congratulations to the Bridgeforth Farms for, you know, getting selected. That's, I mean, that's a great contract for them, I'm sure. And then AL.com ran a piece today. So you may be aware that medical marijuana is all the rage. Medical marijuana is going to cure all your needs. It can even cure, like, you know, menopause and who knows what else. I'm just saying. But medical marijuana is apparently going to be allowed under Alabama law under this completely distorted version of Republican politics that we saw pass it into law just about, what, 2 years ago? And 3 years ago. And I could spend all day talking about it. It didn't matter whether it was the aspirin bill. The way they did that bill was awful. Build government, grow taxes, infringe on civil liberties, you know, violate the FDA, just all of it. Anyway, now the Cannabis Commission has been having its woes. Woes. So the Cannabis Commission was formed as a part of the medical marijuana bill. And the Cannabis Commission, well, they haven't quite had their act together. It's been quite the doings in Alabama to watch and see as it acted sort of like a three-ring circus with monkeys just jumping around, making a mess, just slinging feces at each other. I just give you a full imagery. But AL.com has a piece that says, last Friday, the Alabama Medical Cannabis Commission, in their third go-around, awarded their licenses to cultivate, process, test, transport, and sell marijuana products to 20 companies. Keep in mind, they've issued licenses two other times. Both times, the processes they used were challenged in court, and they wind up having to disregard the licenses and start over again. This has been quite the debacle. But the Alabama Medical Cannabis Commission may have finally got it right, says Roy Johnson, who writes for AL.com. Roy Johnson, who I think actually hates the state of Alabama. I don't know for a fact. Roy Johnson typically writes from a perspective that says that Alabama is either corrupt or Alabama is racist or the, I don't know, where Alabama's betrodden. I don't know. But here's the thing. After mentioning that, you know, the Cannabis Commission has had a hard time getting their act together, he then goes into the question of how come there are not more minority-owned companies getting licenses? I don't know, Roy. Maybe they didn't apply. Maybe they didn't meet the standards. Is that possible? It's possible. I think it's more than possible. I think it's likely. But it doesn't mean anything, except he points out the law as passed by the Republican supermajority did require that at least a quarter of the awardees have to be 51% minority owned, defined as African American, Native American, Hispanic, or of Asian descent. It's according to the law. But he points out, says Roy, African American entrepreneurs account for less than 2% of the cannabis business owners in the nation. What if they're not applying? What do you do then? What if they're fly by night and they're like, you know, there's, or they have, you know, not met the criteria in some other capacity? He says even worse than it was in 2017 when it was only 4.3% black ownership in cannabis companies. Okay, that's Roy Johnson's take is, it's not about the Cannabis Commission. He also points out, here's the statement he makes. It's imperative that minority firms, y'all, I'm telling you. He says it's imperative that minority firms not be left out of this new Oklahoma land rush or California gold rush. See, I told you, it's not about helping people. It's about the cannabis industry, which is a $1 billion industry, having more people. They don't want it legalized. All this stuff, well, you couldn't legalize it, so we had to do it by medical means. No, you didn't. Because the minute they legalize it, and you can grow it in your own backyard, guess what? They lose their money. Because they can no longer have a constrained grip on the market. Think about this. When in the free market have you ever seen something where the state says, yeah, we're only going to give out 20 licenses in the whole state? I mean, come on. What other industry has that? I'm sorry. You're only allowed to have 15 grocery stores in the whole state.
Yeah, there's a number of issues that's going on with that cannabis stuff. Oh, I've actually got a friend that's knee deep in the middle of all of that, and from the violation of Open Meetings Act.
Oh,
that, I mean, they had something like 6 hours of closed door discussion.
I have no doubt.
And then came out and basically said, "All right, this is who's getting it," with zero public discussion as a board. And apparently that those simple things. It's just like what we saw here in Gadsden. So just in the function of government,
it's jackassery.
Yeah. And then if you're going to, I mean, okay, so if you're going to approve it and you're going to pass a law that authorizes it, why don't you just set you've got to meet this standard and you're going to get a license. Why are we limiting it?
That's exactly right. Because the reality is, if you don't get the best weed, you got to know for a fact that you're getting the good competition. Run down the street, get the better weed from the other place. That's what that's the American way.
That's just scratching the surface on what's going on with all of that.
They don't want everybody having the munchies, I guess. The whole thing's a mess. It's an absolute mess. A couple more stories here for you, just so you know. I'm a longtime big fan of the Alabama State Archives. I will say, in general, I love the State Archives. What is that, in case you don't know? Right down in Montgomery, literally right next door to the state capitol, is this big, beautiful, regal building called the Alabama State Archives. It's basically our state museum. And it's where all the artifacts are kept. I mean, they have a staff of curators there who do an amazing job at curating Alabama's history. They have amazing museum quality displays and rooms you can walk through, and, you know, interactive displays for kids, school groups to go through. And then every once in a while, they get a little crazy. So most recently, they hosted their LGBTQ history luncheon at the Alabama State Archives using state tax dollars. Interesting. And then on top of that, I know for a fact that the drag queen who protested, I've forgotten her name, his name, on the steps of the Capitol against Roy Moore some time back, they chose to go ahead and make a display of the drag queen's dress because it was significant to Alabama history. No, it wasn't. Well, State Senator Chris Elliott tried to get him on the show today, but he was otherwise detained. He's got a bill coming, and he says, "We tried it in our special session. We didn't get it done, but we're going to rearrange the way that board gets its membership." He said, "Right now it's a self-perpetuating board that selects itself continuously, and that's not the way government should be run. They're looking at doing appointments by elected officials, so like the lieutenant governor would have one, the governor would have one, and they appoint these folks, and that's truthfully the way it's supposed to be." Well, I hope that they can get this straightened out, because the last thing I want to see is wokeism taking over our state library, our state archives. Because it's an amazing facility, y'all. And I'd encourage you, by the way, if you're heading to Montgomery, go by and see it. It really is spectacular. Last story. Told you before that the Birmingham area, has got to get its crime rate under control. I mean, it's really bad. It's one of the highest per capita murder rates in the nation. Per capita. Not like in actual raw data numbers, but per capita, one of the highest in the nation. You've got an administration in Liberal Mayor Randall Woodfin's city hall that excuses crime and chooses not to prosecute, and even did if you remember about a year and a half ago, he did a blanket pardon, any and all minor drug offenses for marijuana and other possession crimes in city courts. He pardoned them going back to like 1982 or 92, I forget which. I mean, was he born then? I don't even know. But here's the thing. That is actually an abuse of office. What that tells law enforcement is, I don't have your back. What that tells the DAs and the city officials who prosecute, I don't have your back. What he's basically saying is, the criminal needs a little consideration here. Well, it's showing up in a lot of ways. And we just had the 125th homicide this year in Birmingham, 125. He said, in all of Jefferson County, in this article from AL.com, there have been 174, 125 of those were in the city of Birmingham. There was a shootout the other night. This happened, the story came out yesterday. The shootout occurred, I think, on Sunday, maybe late Saturday. But in the 900 block of Fifth Avenue downtown near the Chevron gas station, right off the interstate, I-65. A lot of y'all know where I'm talking about. Downtown Birmingham. Police arrived after reports of gunshots to find two men wounded inside a vehicle. One of them died. Y'all, the vehicle was riddled with over 17 bullet holes. This was not a single bang, bang, gone. This was a fusillade of gunfire. I don't know how many might have been fired back from the vehicle. All I know is this. 17 shots on one vehicle in the middle of downtown Birmingham at 3:40 p.m. in the afternoon. That's a daylight hours situation. That's next level right there.
That's a school bus might be going off in the background to drop kids off type of thing.
It was on
thing.
A Saturday, luckily.
Oh, it was a Saturday.
Yeah, but still, broad daylight. I mean, it takes a lot to get some daylight action in this time of year because the sun goes down at freaking 4:30. But there they were, 3:40 in the afternoon, right downtown, just off the interstate by a gas station. Two men wounded in a vehicle, 17 bullet holes in the vehicle. One man died. Got to get it under control, City of Birmingham. Got to get it under control. All right, listen, we're taking a break right now. You're going to love this next section. I'm calling it Snowflakes and Know-Nothings. I mean, do we have an entire generation that's just never been told its own history? And are they always so offended that you can say nothing and, you know, not offend somebody? That's just amazing. We'll talk about it. Snowflakes and Know-Nothings. We'll be right back.